Welcome to the Faith Together podcast from the Center for Faith and Family at Olivet Nazarene University. If you believe that passing down Christian faith is essential for the next generation, you are in the right place. Enjoy conversations with guests who are faith practitioners, parents, caregivers, pastors, counselors, and many more. You'll enjoy practical tools and community for passing down Christian faith to your children and grandchildren. Welcome back to the Faith Together podcast. We're excited to be with you today. This is Leon Blanchett, and I'm here with our co-host, Lindsay.
Hey, everybody.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Leon?
I'm good. We have a special treat today. We have with us Dr. Brandon Arbuckle, who works in the School of Psychology. Is that right?
That's right. Yep.
At Olivet Nazarene University. So, Brandon, thank you for being with us today.
Sure.
We are working on a series right now of healthy parenting. And the topic we're going to talk about today is really important, and that's the role that marriage plays in healthy parenting. So let's start by having you just introduce yourself to us. Tell us a little bit about you so we can get to know you a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist, been practicing as a clinician for, since 2000. And I also have a master's in religion from another Nazarene university. And together, I didn't want to sacrifice either child, went into a PhD program in pastoral theology from Garrett Evangelical Theological Seminary, a Methodist seminary on the campus of Northwestern, and have just defended my dissertation and kind of in the process of revising things for completion graduation in the spring.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks. Now, you left an important part out that I know about, and that is you're an elder in the Church of Nazarene. Is that right?
I am. It's not one of those credentials that I often hold out while I'm counseling couples or families, but yes, I am an ordained elder in the Church of the Nazarene and have been such since 2011.
Yeah, great. Well, so our goal with our podcast is to help parents successfully pass their faith onto their children. We've talked about this already, but we know that a really important thing for you all that are listening to us today, we want to be a part of that. And so one of the things that we know is that healthy parents are more successful at passing on their faith. So we've asked Brandon to come and talk with us about that. So let's start with some questions now that we've kind of got an idea of who Brandon is. So Lindsay, you want to get us started on that?
Sure.
Yeah. So Brandon, we know that when we're passing on faith to our kids, to our grandkids, whatever that may look like, we want to pass down a healthy faith. We want them to have a living and an active faith and to see that modeled in their lives. And a lot of that modeling comes from the parents that they are attached to and the marriage that they see modeled. And so I would love to just hear from your experience what you define and what you see as a healthy marriage.
Yeah, great question, Lindsay. And I think you're absolutely right that, you know, from top down, modeling your faith is a critical component to having a faithful family. When it comes to a healthy marriage, the challenge is really in defining what is health. And here in this context, of course, we're likely kind of privileging the notion of a Christian family and a healthy Christian family. In the abstract, of course, it becomes a challenge to define health as though it's somehow separate from the rationale to be married in the first place. For example, a lot of folks will say, I want to get married because of any number of utilitarian reasons, one of which is to have kids. Of course, when children grow up and move out, as children often inevitably will do, the ability for parents to rationalize what it means to stay married then becomes a challenge, which indicates, you know, higher divorce rates around that 55 to 65 your age range. It's an uptick in the divorce rate according to national statistics. And that is to say that when parents find their kids are gone, they often wonder, who are you and what are you doing in my house? And then we have to kind of rationalize or kind of come back to the table to define that. With respect to a healthy marriage, though, generally speaking, it really requires two things. One, a shared vision of the future. And two, adaptability. Of course, the critical component that sort of holds both these together is trust. A shared vision of the future is one that, you know, comes almost out of Scripture. In the Old Testament, I think Proverbs says that people without a vision will perish. And in this instance, it's true for marriages as well. And that is to say, a shared vision of the future is not the same vision. It requires that we sort of set out for this kind of qualitative description of a relationship. I want respect. I want love. I want care. These are sort of qualitative descriptions that are to be then interpreted in their particularities between the partners, so that we're not saying, I want a white picket fence with this kind of person who has this kind of income, drives this kind of vehicle. There's a name for those people who have all of those elements named out before they get married. And the name for those people is usually single. And so we don't want to exhaust the oxygen that allows for a kind of robust discussion about what a shared vision of the future is and how my role is different than maybe your role in pursuing that shared vision. When it comes to the notion of play, or adaptability rather, play is a key component there. And the research on this kind of comes out of work of John Gottman. Gottman's a mathematician, frankly, who has kind of entered the world of couples work because he graduated from MIT with a PhD in math and said, I don't know how to meet women. And so he said he'll do what he's always done and study it. And so from his research for the last 35, 40 years now, it's been sort of the standard bearer within the domain of couples work about what seems to maybe contribute to a sustainable, healthy, intimate partnership. And for him, the notion of play becomes a critical part of the adaptability of a couple. And play is not some whimsical, disproportionately advantageous quality, like I play golf and I've invited you to go play golf with me, but you never play golf, and so we never play together. That would be a disproportionate level of what we might call emotional risk, that if I play golf all the time and I invite my wife or my partner out to go play golf, even though they've never played, you know, that's not really equal. They don't have the capacity to enjoy the game the way you might. And so with that, play is distilled down to somewhat of an algorithm. It is two people, an equal level of emotional risk. Equal level of emotional risk is really the critical component there. Participating in a benign activity. A benign activity, again, would be things that you wouldn't automatically assume are fun, but benign. Like, let's go visit that restaurant that neither of us have been to before and evaluate, you know, did we like it? Did we not? What did we like about it? What did we not like about it? When we're learning things about each other, that seems to comport to the ability to learn how to adapt to one another. And in doing so, helps to sustain the kind of brittle corners that sometimes intrude, challenge our ability to sustain a relationship.
Yeah, Brandon, this is what I'm hearing you say. I'm hearing you say that the relationship that this couple has together outside of the children themselves becomes critical in the way that their faith gets passed on to their children. Is that an accurate assessment?
That's right. And Leon, I would even argue, and I know this may be somewhat controversial, but I back it up with some scripture, and that is that it's okay to be selfish as a couple. Selfish is often seen in a negative sense. But when we're talking about selfish, we're often talking about self-neglect, that I'm neglecting to take care of myself and I'm requiring you to do so. That's probably more a malignant version of selfish. What I'm thinking of in terms of selfish is when we think about the two great commandments, love your Lord God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. Well, how do I love myself? Well, see, rule number one.
Right.
Rule number one is learn to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And when you do that, you end up doing a pretty good job of caring for you in ways that allow you to become a generous partner, lover, parent, friend, neighbor, and so on.
Yeah, so that's really good. As I'm thinking about you all who are listening in today, I'm thinking there's probably some of you that are thinking, wait a minute, I'm not married. Either I'm a single parent, I've never been married or maybe divorced, want to serve the Lord, want to help my children serve the Lord. So hopefully you haven't tuned us out yet, because I think we have some things to speak to you as well. And so, Brandon, if you would, talk a little bit about what this looks like for a single parent, whatever their circumstances that brings them to being a single parent, as they try to live this out for their kids.
Sure, yeah. So much, I guess, sentiment is given over to this notion that a healthy child is best served insofar as their parents remain married. And while there may be some data that seem to correlate to children who learn to adjust to the world in pretty favorable ways, kind of come from homes where there's two parents who are together and love them, it's important, I think, from a research perspective, to be mindful that correlation does not equate to causation. That is to say, just because there is some evidence that indicate that might be, does not mean that it causes children to necessarily be well adapted. Because there's some pretty a lot of research on unhealthy relationships and their awful impact on children's lives. Chaotic homes, abusive homes, and being married just for the sake of staying married under some notion that it's somehow beneficial to the children. What are we modeling for the children in those occasions? And what ends up happening is we end up modeling abuse and modeling violence, and therefore in many ways extending that violence into other relationships by normalizing it under this sentiment of we just got to be together. In truth, I think there's a lot more to be said about couples who look at their relationship and say that there's a diminishing return on investment here. And despite all the efforts and attempts to somehow repair and reconcile, it seems that we're not able to do so. That is to say that there are alternatives, meaning that I still can make sure that in the onset of this relationship's demise and the potential divorce or dissolving of the relationship, that doesn't necessarily mean my child is any less than, because now I have an opportunity to double down on those relationships that are now available to me, to bring them into my life so that I can model for my child some semblance of good and hopefulness. In the end, kids have the courage to marry because parents give them a possibility. And if the only possibility children have in front of them is abuse, why would any reasonable person pursue marriage? And so with that, people that are in a co-parenting relationship with a partner who is unhelpful or abusive or otherwise just disruptive in their life, again, coming back to that earlier sentiment, take good care of you because your child is watching. And in doing so, scaffold your life with people that are really supportive and caring and loving so that your children do have people to see. This doesn't necessarily mean you have to be married. There are a wide variety. Hopefully the church fosters these kind of relationships, though I must admit sometimes it is a challenge in the church to find these. But again, those who are in a co-parenting relationship, not approaching those co-parenting relationships with a sense of I have to or must control them. My partner or my former partner has to do certain things. See it as an opportunity to say I must probably double down on other relationships that are perhaps a bit more fruitful.
Brandon, as I agree with that so much with what you just said, and I'm just wondering, as for me, as a children's pastor in this area and working with lots and lots of families, I can see both situations in my mind that you've just shared, you know, the parents that are married that are working to prioritize their relationship and take good care of the kids that are around them, passing that faith on, but then those that are doing it in a different way and scaffolding those relationships. I love that term. In your experience, what would you say is helpful to those that are parenting with a scaffolding structure? I'm sure we can all think of people in our own lives that are in those situations. How can we come alongside them to say, hey, we're here to help, we're here to serve and to see faith move on in your kids?
Yeah, I think, at least in the tradition of the Church of the Nazarene as an ordained elder, I kind of speak out of that tradition. All relationships are really reducible to invitations. And so it's for the church, it's for pastors, it's for leaders, it's for Sunday school teachers to invite and be persistent in those invitations and find places and opportunities to be creative in those invitations. Again, coming back to maybe the more adaptive spirit here, play is a real, real valuable thing. And finding occasions where you can playfully engage those who may be in a challenging position to invite them to opportunities for levity. Gottman, I think, is helpful here too when he mentions the benefit of play is that it is levity. Lightness. His phrase is that levity is the cartilage of our emotional bones. And that is to say that it offers us sort of a softness, a kind of pliability. And if we come to people in our churches or in some community context and thrust upon them or demand of them to participate in these connections, it fails to be sustainable. But if we offer out of love and perhaps play, then it helps to neutralize the pain that a person might be experiencing while also affording them a sense of connection.
Any parent knows by watching their kids that play is more than just a waste of time, something to keep them busy, that play brings about learning experiences. I mean, Lindsay, you and I see this all the time in our ministries, but you parents see this as well. You watch your kids play, you watch them mimic what they see in you, you watch them play in their house center at their home and mimic what they see. So one of the things that, Brandon, I hear you kind of, I don't know that you've used this word yet, but it seems to be the context, and that is this idea of modeling. We talk quite a bit about modeling in the church, about if you want someone to take on a new habit or a new discipline, one of the best ways to do that is to model it for them, let them see you doing it with them, participating together. I see play being some of that. So talk maybe a little bit about practical things that parents can do that model faith to their kids. So as these parents are working together, as they have a common goal and they're working toward developing their marriage so that they can pass faith to their kids, what are some of the things that they can do in modeling faith for their kids?
Sure, yeah. Two key components to being able, I think, I want to speak anecdotally here, my sense is two critical pieces of passing down one's faith or the faith of a people is structure and attachment. So in this instance, structure creates the conditions where a sense of reliability on resources and access to affection can be made known. You think about a child, you know, children are not much different than adults in that they're going to use the tools that they have to try and influence the circumstance in which they live. And so sometimes temper tantrums are seen as disruptive, but it's really just a child trying to gain influence over their circumstance. Children can normalize their temper tantrums when a chaotic environment does not afford them a sense of reliability. So they use coercion. Children use coercion through temper tantrums to kind of control the environment. If, however, parents come to the table and have certain rituals that seem to allow children to gain ease of access to resources like comfort, affection, love, and a voice for influencing the situation that they're in, it tends to allow the attachment bond to emerge a little less coercively. In this instance, structured activities, rituals like anything, our family occasionally during bedtimes transition from playing a video game or watching a movie or reading a book or whatever it might be, can become a little thorny when you're asking kids to get ready for bed. And one of the things that we do on occasion to kind of neutralize those transitions is we participate in a playful game, a ritual, as it were, that we call competition for who can give the most awkward hug goodnight. And what's interesting about that is that it helps to create a sort of physiological awareness that children mm-hmm. become aware of their own bodies, but also it allows for comfort to emerge in close proximity to other people, meaning that when we get close to each other, I'm okay with that connection. And it neutralizes the competitive spirit of the game, as it were, by making the person who wins the loser and the loser, perhaps somehow a winner. And, you know, looking at each other's faces, making funny faces. The point here is that when you structure this out or ritualize it, kids can anticipate with reason to have a bit of influence on their circumstance. Bring into the discussion now things like, let's learn to pray. Let's think about questions we might ask if we were to talk with God. Let's talk about our rituals that we encounter maybe at church and normalize the culture of what it means to be a part of a community of faith. When we're doing things like that, opening the Bible, helping children become familiar with Scripture, these sort of rituals afford children a sense of agency that they might not have if their only resource is coercion. And so, again, offering these routinely, frequently, and allowing them to have their own kind of nuance to the family and people within the family affords a sense of comfort and familiarity along the way that it supports the attachment.
Love that.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. I love the awkward hug activity.
makes going to church normal sometimes, too. awkward hugs there.
That does happen. It does. Every introvert's worst nightmare is when you have to do the meet and greet and the hugging, you know?
That's right.
So
right.
I love that. Thank you for those tips. I think we can at times underestimate how important play, ritual, you know, can be to have those specific structures in our lives. And we can learn just as much as the kids can from those times together.
Yeah, good. Brandon, we're going to wrap this up here in just a little bit. Are there any tips that you would love to give our parents? So one of the things that we have told them is that this podcast is going to be practical. We want to give them practical tools that they can begin using today. Your awkward hug is probably one of those that they could begin a tradition like that and name it maybe after you or something as a part of their family ritual. But can you maybe give us just a couple tips of real practical things that healthy parents do with their children that encourages them, lifts them up, empowers them, makes them want to be like Jesus?
Sure. So one thing that this is a little nerdy, but within the domain of neuroscience, parents can do is connect to redirect. That little phrase comes from Tina Payne Bryson and Dan Siegel. And connect to redirect just simply means that before I can expect to influence my child's behavior, I probably ought to connect with them. A lot of children flooded, whether it's transitioning from one task to another or just having a bad day. You know, this notion, the acronym HALT, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. When you run through that little rubric, you begin to kind of imagine what it is that's getting at a child. And so when you help them gain access to food, or you comfort them and they're angry, or you provide them some influence, allow for them to have some influence when they're lonely, or when you help them to be comforted and get some rest, you help to slow them down in terms of their activity or flooding effect. And so connecting with children is an important component to helping them also embody what we were taught as people who are loved by God. And that is that in order for us to know what love is, it can't be that I teach God how to love. It's that God first loved me. And that in order for me as a parent to hope to gain influence in my child's life, it would be first and foremost important for me to show my child what love is. And doing that in the form of connecting with them and learning how to attach to them, or with them rather, by giving them what they might need to slow down, that we can connect, becomes, I think, a kind of practical way forward. In that instance, you know, attachment happens because we have first been attached to something that is a bit more substantial than our own means.
All right. Lindsay, anything you want to add before we bring this to a conclusion?
I just want to say thank you so much for joining us today, Brandon. You
gave
us a lot to think about. I'm taking so many notes thinking about even that acronym of HALT, being able to identify, you know, what we need to do to connect before you redirect. And, you know, phrases like that, I think, are so helpful to me and to our audience and to all of us here that can be of service to the kids that we love so much. So,
I want to add my thanks, Brandon, for coming and being a part of this with us. And I understand congratulations is due. You just defended your dissertation.
I did, with revision. So I have that kind of sitting out there in queue waiting for me to dot an I, cross a T. But,
well, I think for those of us who have been through that journey, that's a pretty common experience. So
the finish line is in reach.
That's great. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And we want to thank you for joining us today. May the Lord bless you, keep you, and give you peace. You've been listening to the Faith Together podcast from the Center for Faith and Family at Olivet Nazarene University. Sign up for additional resources at centerff.com. When building faith, we are better together.